I have to confess that it's going to be Tishave, and meet Hashem not next Monday, but next Thursday, we'll be doing Kusis from Yer Hashem. So it's business as usual. Let's have a look at the beginning of Parshas Tishave. The opening pasuk presents quite a number of problems. Number one, we don't have the usual introduction of Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'Emor, Tzavet b'nei Yisrael, but rather Ve'atah, the use of the second person pronoun with the imperative. That's number one. Number two, there is no indication that this Shemen Zayizoch is going to be made. Rather, the Yikichu, it is to be taken, which implies that there is no need to make Shemen Zayizoch. And number three, a rather unusual word in this context of Elechot. If it was merely an instruction that they have to taste the Shemen Zayis, then it should have been V'yikichu Shemen Zayisot. The Ramban tackles these problems, and let us see what he has to say. Omar HaKotul Bekan, the verse indicates here, V'atah Kitzaveh, and you shall command. Why do we have this particular place? Vavur, the reason is, Sheomar b'mishkan tomid, the usual phrase that we have come upon in Parsha Terumo is Ve'osinto, and you shall make the hubitzivui. And the word Ve'osinto is taken to mean not that Moshe Rabbeinu shall make, but rather that he shall see to it that the various items are made by other people. So therefore, the ordinary imperative would have indicated that Moshe Rabbeinu can do what he is being told to do through other people. So therefore, says the Ramban, had the Torah said, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Tzavet b'nei Yisrael, then Moshe Rabbeinu would have been entitled to conclude not that he is commanded to instruct, but rather he is given the duty to see to it that the relevant people are commanded. Al Yedei Acherim. So in order to dispel that type of notion, Omar Bekan, the pasuk says in its opening words, Ve'atah, and you, the Atzmecha, you alone, Tzaveh Aleihem, will command them, Sheyikichu Elecha Es Shemen Hamo'or, that they shall bring to you the oil for the lighting. That's the first problem answered. Why the Atzmecha Tzaveh and not that? Now the Ramban has a different problem. And that is the Yikichu. Let them take, but no instruction to make. Says the Ramban, She'ein ki'ein lohem derech la'asos oso b'midbar. There's no commandment to make Shemen Zayis because they're in the wilderness. And in the wilderness you can't make it because there are no olives. Rak im hoyo et long mishmeret. The only hope you have is that there are people who already have come out of Mitzrayim with olive oil, and that olive oil meets the ritual requirements as stated in the pasuk, and if they have that type of oil, then you take it. If you haven't got it already with you, there's no way you can make it. The Hanisiyim Hebiyuhu, and we'll know from later on in Sefer Shemot, that it was, in fact, the princes who brought this oil. So you know now why it is the Yikichu, and not that they shall make, because there is nothing to make the oil from. So they have to rely during the entire 40 years in the wilderness on whatever oil they have brought out from Mitzrayim. That's the Ramban. And then the next problem. What is the word Elecho? Let them take to you. says the Ramban, Sayyidi Uhu Lefano, they've got to bring the oil for inspection to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Huyir Enu, and he will examine it, in Huzach the Chosit Korahui, if it is pure and if it is beaten as is appropriate. And we have the same theme again in Parshas Emor, Davis B'nai Yisrael B'Yikachu Eilech. So if you want to know what the word Eilecho is doing there, says the Ramban, it is to indicate that no oil may be used unless it has received the approval of Moshe Rabbeinu. And you may recall last year we in fact mentioned that the source of the Ramban is in a Medrash Ketav Yad, which is quoted in the Torah Shleimah, the encyclopedic work of Torah commentary of Menachem Kasher, Olav HaShalom. And there the Medrash says that the oil was to be brought to Moshe Rabbeinu. And at later times in our history, when there was no Moshe Rabbeinu, it would be brought to the Kohen Gadol for his seal of approval that the oil was appropriate and fit for use. And as Kasher points out correctly, this answers the question of the Rishonim already in the Gemara Shabbos, when they tell us that after the Chashmonaim had defeated the Yevonim, and they came back to the temple, and they looked for a cruse of oil which had the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and the Rishonim asked, look through the entire Talmudic literature, and you will not find anywhere that it is necessary for the oil to have the Chosomo Shel Kohen Gadol. This chapter in the Talmud, you won't find it. But the source is in a Medrash subject. Now, for a moment, I want to indulge in a little mathematics. Because it was indicated through the Ramban that in actual fact, there was no oil made for the Mishkan during the time that the Jewish people were in the wilderness. Now, the menorah had to be lit every night. And we know that a certain amount of oil had to be used, and to cut the story short, it is calculated that no less than 50,000 loaves of oil should have been used over 40 years in the wilderness. A loaf is between 12 and 21.25 ounces. So you're looking at between 17 and 29 tons of oil. So even the Machmirim have got problems. You've got a Nesiyim bringing out 29, according to some people, 30 tons of oil. So the style is, I don't believe that there was that amount of oil available in the camp of Israel. You have to remember they left in a hurry too. So how are we going to explain the Ramban? The Ramban says it says v'yikichu eilecho because nobody made. And he's perfectly right. There was no olive trees. There were nothing to use to make the oil. So the shaila that I had was, how come that they brought out so much oil to the wilderness? And I came across, quite by accident, a Medrash Tanchuma. And I only want to read out two lines from that particular Medrash Tanchuma, and we will see, to use the pun, that it sheds a little light on our problem. Third line down. Omer Rabbi Chanino Segan HaKohanim. This Rabbi Chanino, who is the Segan HaKohanim, the Segan Kohen Gadol. Ani Hoyisi Mishamesh Beveit HaMedrash, Beveit HaMikdash. I was the one who served in the Beveit HaMikdash. And the menorah functioned in a miraculous fashion. They used to light it on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and it never went out till the next year. So I feel we are entitled to suggest that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed these miracles for those who lived in the time of Bayis Sheni, which was not on the Madrega of Bayis Rishon, which itself was not on the Madrigo of the Mishkan, as we indicated in a very beautiful passage of the Sephorna at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei last year, that if Maisa Nisim were performed for those who lived during the time of Bayis Sheni, Kalvachoma, then Benoshel Kalvachoma, we are entitled to conclude that a similar miracle happened for Bnei Yisrael during the time when they were in the Midbar, and therefore you can immediately divide your totals that I have mentioned by 40. And therefore, if anything, it becomes at least a realistic amount of oil that the Bnei Yisrael had in their possession. Rebmeir Arik, Nechatari Levlocha, in the style of Shuvis Imre Yosher, asks, however, a very pointed question. If, in fact, we are to assume that the Medrash Tanchuma is correct for Bayis Sheni, we are taking it into times of the Mishkan, but let's leave it for a moment, even in the context of Bayis Sheni. Rav Meir Arik in the Shuvis asks, if, in fact, there is a mitzvah to light the menorah every night, so how come that the menorah is lighting from one end of the year to the other? There's a mitzvah that you've got to light it every evening. So how come that they had just the one mitzvah once a year? And he is nishav v'tzorachim. The matter is that remains unresolved for Rav Meir Arik. The truth of the matter is, the Shaila was asked in the last century by the Gera Rebbe to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And Rav Chaim answered, Kedarko Bakodesh, with a Rambam. As you know, one of the 39 prohibitions on Shabbos, the Oros Malachos, is against kindling a fire, Mazir. Says Rav Chaim, if you look into the writings of the Rambam, Pedek Yud Beis Mehilchis Shabbos, Halacha Day, you will discover there that according to the Rambam, if a person adds a drop of oil on Shabbos to a lamp which is already lighting, he is liable because of Mavir. He is liable because of kindling. There's the Chaim Briska, the Choshes. Every night, they added a drop of oil. And since it is called Mavir in regards to Shabbos, it's also called Mavir in regards to lighting the menorah. That was the Chaim's answer. So we see it there. It's a double borrow that this was the way the Medrash Tanchuma would assume that we are fulfilling the mitzvah of lighting the menorah every year. As I have indicated to you, the word Eilecha caused the Ramban a certain amount of problem, and they shall bring to you. Ramban answered that it was brought to Moshe Rabbeinu for his approval. But look now at the Meshech Chochma that you have at the bottom of the sheet, and you'll discover there a most wonderful interpretation, and also a very novel syntax of the pasuk. The Meshech Chochma is prepared to suggest that the word Eilecha is to be understood as a form of Lecha. And you know, of course, in the famous Rashi of Lech Lecha, Lecha means Lahanotecha L'tovotecha, for your benefit. So the Meshech Chochma is now going to suggest to us that there is some benefit that accrues to Moshe Rabbeinu through the kindling of the menorah, for which reason the Torah will use the word the Yekechu Eilecha, as if the Torah is saying, and they will take for your benefit. How can it be of benefit to Moshe Rabbeinu? Says Meshech Chochma's follows. Yitachein, I would suggest that the word Eilecha, meaning for your benefit, may be understood in that way. Al pi divrei Horeb Avram ibn Ezra b'parshas v'halos. I would suggest that if we bear in mind the thesis of the Ibn Ezra, at the very beginning of Parshas Baalos, we will be able to explain. Why? Because even as it says, Shiyaf alti shiyomru, even though Chazal say, says the Ibn Ezra, Kol divro shinyin barakodish baruch hu in Moshe lo hoyo elav hayom, that HaKodesh Baruch Hu only spoke with Moshe Rabbeinu by day. Christian, eh? Or as the Pope says in Vueiro, Beyond the Bela Kemel Moshe. Even though we know that that is an accepted cloud by Chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu only by day, the Chose, says Ibn Ezra, nevertheless, Kishahayu Hanelo Zolikim, if there were light burning in the Mishkan, Hoya Kayom. In other words, the theme is not that God only spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu when it was day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu only spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu when it was light. Is Memele Kishahayu Hanelo Zolikim, Hoya Kayom, Tidiber Imo Baloilo. So therefore, says Ibn Ezra, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu not only by day, but even by night when there was light. And the Ibn Ezra answers in this way, why the parsha of the Halosecho et Anelos, the parsha of the menorah, which begins the Sidra of Halosecho, is placed next to the pasuk at the end of parsha. Not so, Ubervo Moshe el Ohel Moed Daveri So, by Yishma Sako, Ni Daveri Lovet. Why is the menorah put next to Ubervo Moshe el Ohel Moed? To tell you that not only when it was day did HaKadosh Baruch Hu speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, but even when it was night and there was illumination, even then HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him. The Ramban severely criticizes the position of the Ibn Ezra. Interestingly enough, the Abarbanel defends the Ibn Ezra and says, on the contrary, that if it is part of the greatness of the Nebuah of Moshe Rabbeinu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could come to him at any time, then how can you automatically cancel out 50% of the day? The Cholei Tzeirta, whenever Moshe Rabbeinu would want, he would be able to have the Nebuah. So you're canceling out 50% of the day by saying it can never be by night. Says the Ibn Ezra, on the contrary, if there is illumination, it can be by night. So therefore, Lo ze omar, that is why the Pasuk says, Vikechu elecho, meaning l'tzorechecho, for your needs, it will be something from which you will derive benefit. Sheho adam, says the Meshechochma, Sheho adam da'o bohir be'eitoho. Because the whole reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot come to a Nabi when it is dark is because when there is darkness, it is a psychological consequence that the mood is not one of joy. Because when it is dark, the mood is dark. And the Nebuah cannot come down to the Nabi unless he is the Simcha. So therefore, when there is light, the individual Navi spirits are expanded and raised, and therefore Nebuah becomes possible. In other words, the criterion is not day and night. The criterion is darkness and light. And if there is light, then it should be as appropriate to receive prophecy during that time as it is during the day. Ukamo, as the Tana de Velio says, Ein Ola Elo. And bearing that in mind, the reason why in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu the menorah was lit was Eilecha, for the benefit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Aye, what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer alive? Why do we light the menorah? Says the Meshech Chochma, that's why the Apostle concludes later on, Chukas Olam Ledoro Tom. When it comes to succeeding generations, it is a chukas olam. It's a statute without understanding. Because the same benefits do not accrue because you're not speaking about the Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. So therefore the Indian of the menorah is divided into two. Called the man they were in the midbar of his man Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason for the menorah was Eilecha, because Moshe Rabbeinu was to derive benefit. But after Moshe Rabbeinu was gone, the reason is now unfathomable, and it becomes a chukas olam ledoro seichem, the yesh b'nei yisroel. Shaladoro says the Meshech Chochma, who chok b'litam. It is a statute without a reason that we can fathom, u'gezeirah hi milefonai, and it is a decree from above. because we cannot say that we are lighting it in order to light the way of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, because as the Medrash points out, Klum Leodo Anisoris, when God commands us to light the menorah, God is saying to us, I don't need the light. Because in reality, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who showed us light when he led us through the wilderness. So we certainly cannot provide light for the one who provides light for us. So that is the theme, says the Meshe Chochma, basing himself on the Shit of Ibn Ezra, why the Pasuk would say, V'yikachu Eilech. And then he just goes on to add one thought, and that is, to me, there, Remez L'mashakot HaVitzma, let me just explain that since we have it in our text, and then we'll move on. There is a similar theme in Mishpat, in judgment, as there is in the Ruach. According to Jewish law, Dinei Momonos, civil matters, may only be begun by day. V'hoya b'yom hanchilo et bonov. It can only begin by day. Once the case begins by day, it can be completed at night. But it can't begin at night. Says the Sma, the author of the Sefer on the Ido Seinayim on the Choshen Mishpat, says the Sma, but if the room is illuminated, it has the same din as day. And you can begin a case even at night where there is light. So Meshe Chochma is suggesting that what the Ibn Ezra is saying in regards to prophecy, that the criterion is not day, but life, the Sama is saying exactly the same thing in regards to justice and judging Dinei Momonos, that the criterion is not day, the criterion is life. So there we've had a look at the opening book. What I would like to do now is to move on to one of the most fascinating items mentioned in our parsha of this week. And I will refer you to Perek Kaf Ches, Pasuk Lamed. This is a rather lengthy passage in the Ramban. I don't apologize for it because as we go through these sidras, there is so much that we read and that we've read year after year, and we still are as uninitiated into these inyanim this year as we were last year and the year before. So I believe, whether it's halacha or maisa at this particular moment in time, nevertheless, at least we have to know what the inyanim are. As I mentioned to a young gentleman who spoke to me before this year on another matter, one of the tragedies of the study of Torah in these countries is that most of the people who know whatever they know about Torah know them through the English translation. And I always, whenever I speak to somebody about the English translation and how much it lacks, I remember the story that Dr. Lamb told me once about when they put on Shakespeare in Central Park and hundreds of thousands come, and they had Richard, well, at the first, second, I can't remember, and it's not germane to the story anyway. And during the interval, the principal actor is walking up and down behind the stage, and he sees an outer Yidina. And she's walking out, and she seems to have lost all interest in the play. And the principal actor goes after her and says, Madame, you're leaving? You yes. You're not enjoying the performance? She says, no. She says, why not? As well, she says, in Warsaw I heard it in the original Polish, and in English the talking came up. So, I trust you appreciate the point that is being made. We'll go back to the original Polish this evening. So let's have a look then at one of the classic issues, which is a matter of debate amongst the Rishonim, and that is the Urim Betumim. What are they, or what is this? Well, what we are told in the Pasuk, the Nosako El Choshen HaMishpot, and you shall place into the breastplate, Epo Urim Leyes HaTumim. Okay. So let's now have a look at the Ramban. The Ramban as we know, takes issue very often with the Ibn Ezra, but points out immediately in his introduction to his commentary to the Torah that where the Ibn Ezra is concerned, don't be misled by the viciousness, we want to use the word advisedly, of my attacks on him. Because he says, and if I remember the words correctly, the Im Avraham Ibn Ezra Yihyesiya Tokhocho Megula Viyahavo Mitzutor. With Avraham Ibn Ezra, there will be open rebuke, but hidden love. And as you can appreciate, the Ramban wouldn't have taken issue with the Ibn Ezra if the Ibn Ezra wasn't worthwhile taking issue with in the first place. So let's have a look. Tomar Rabbi Avraham Lehitzchakim Deinyan Ha'urim V'Hatum. The Ibn Ezra thought to become wise in regards to the Urim and Tumim. The Omar, and he suggests, Ki Heim Ma'asei Uman Kesev Ezor. That they are some item made by a craftsman out of silver and gold. The Herich Deinyanom, and he dwells at length on exactly what they are. Ki Choshav, because he was of the opinion, Sheheim Al Hatsuro, he thinks that they are some type of item made by a craftsman from silver and gold that contains images of those type of items which astrologers have on their charts, and that will aid them through whatever means to answer questions directed to the bearer of the Urim Vitum. Says the Ramban, the low Omar Klum, and he has said nothing. That's my opinion. But if you want to know what are the Urim V'Tumim, Avol Heim Kedivrei Rashi. The Urim V'Tumim are exactly what Rashi says they are. They are Ksav, they are items written on parchment, Al Shem Hamaphoros, which contain God's ineffable name, written in certain combinations, Nosun Bein Kiflei HaKoshen, put between the pleats of the breastplate, the Rokach Hutzrach Lihiyot Kapur. And in fact, it was for this very reason that we are told in the Torah that the breastplate was folded over, so that the parchment containing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name could be slipped inside in between the two legs. Now he says, I want to prove to you that all that the Urim V'Tumim can be, that's the Shalom, that what the Urim V'Tumim are is the Shem HaMavurah. I want to prove it to you, and it is certainly nothing fashioned by a craftsman out of any of the materials which are associated with the building of the Mishkan and its Kelim, and with the manufacturing of the garments of the Kohanim. The Horayah. And the proof that I bring to you is as follows. Ki lo nizkeru urim v'tumim klal b'maisa ha'umonim. When it tells you later on in Vayakel and Pekudei that the artisans made all that was necessary for the Mishkan, and the artisans wove all the garments which were necessary for the officiant, you will find no mention of the fact that a craftsman made the urim v'tumim. Doesn't say it. Below his kireim, and in fact Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't mention, below his kireim lohem b'tzavah, in the commandment to make the Urim V'Tumim, it doesn't say you shall make the Urim V'Tumim. Notice what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, and into the Choshen Mishpat, you've got to put the Urim V'Tumim. But isn't he going to make them? Below the Maisa Klai. And it doesn't say in Vayakel and Pekudei when it deals about how the instructions of Moshe Rabbeinu were implemented, there is no reference made in regards to the manufacture of Urim V'Tumim. Ubisrat, and if you want to go down and examine in detail the clothes that are worn by the Kohen Gadol, you'll see it says Vayakas Ephod, he made the apron, Vayakas Achoshen, he made the breastplate, Velo Amar Vayakas Urim V'Tumim. But it doesn't say that anybody made the Urim V'Tumim. The Ilu Hayu Maisa Chorot V'Chacham. And if it was an item which was manufactured by a craftsman, Hayu Marich Behem Yosef and Atol, surely because of their very sanctity, the Torah should have dealt at length more with them than with anything else. אם אולי ירצה לקצר בהם ליום קום, I will say to me, but maybe reference was not made because they are a matter of such deep understanding. Says the Ramban, all right. Abbreviate, but don't omit. Abbreviate the manufacture of the Urim V'Tumim. Or your Omer, he should have said, for your feet are Urim V'Tumim, you shall make the Urim V'Tumim, Kasher Heroel Sechor Bahor, as you have been shown on the mountain, Sechor Tehata, tell some either make them out of pure gold, or Kasher Mezukok, or silver. So therefore, since there is no mention of their manufacture, says the Ramban, it confirms Rashi's opinion that they were not items which were manufactured by a craftsman at all. The old Toshukira, now here is something most beautiful. Another item I want to bring to your attention, which will show you that the Urim V'Tumim indeed are not manufactured, but must be something of a very special nature. Because if you look, you will see. Kilo his tear behei hayidio echod mikol akelim kilo nitzrukvah. When you make mention on the first occasion, in Truvo or Tetzave or whatever, of any article which was going to be manufactured for the Mishkan, you will use the indefinite article. Because using the definite article implies that you are referring to something which has already been mentioned. Right? For instance, it says, Vasu Aron, the Yotito Shulchan, the Yotito Menorah, the Chayn Kulam. Okay? I will say to me with the Mishkan, it says, Ve'et HaMishkan Ka'aseh, implying that we've had the Mishkan mentioned before. He says, yes, because in the beginning of Sumo it says, Ve'yotuli Mikdash, and Mikdash is Mishkan. When you mention something for the first time, you do not have the Hei Hayati or the definite article. Then would you mind telling me how come, in regard to the Urim V'Tumim, when they are introduced at the first occasion, it says in the passage which we are now commenting on, Sinachtata Velchoshen HaMishvot, Es Ha'urim V'Es HaTumim. So it cannot be because we have spoken about them before, because we have not. The only reason why the Hei Hayadiyah is being introduced, the definite article, is because they are so important, so revered, so sanctified. And that is something that you don't find in any other Kali of the Mishkan, which immediately indicates to you that they are on a higher plane than anything which is being discussed in all the other sections, Ephod, Koshen, Lotivo, Sylvia, the author, but he had never previously commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to make them, and yet they are introduced to Hei Hayadiyah. And nevertheless, we find the Pasuk has introduced the Hei Hayadiyah, fellow Hiskiroma Kotov, like for Moshe Lavado, and the only one who is instructed in regard to the universe to him is Moshe Rabbeinu himself, when he is told, that's your job. Make sure the universe to him get in there. That's not the Talei's job. That's nobody's job except yours. And over Maite, and even when it comes to the implementation of the instructions, it says, Vayitena Rachoshin Esurim Yitatumim. The reason being, Kilo Hayu Maasei Uman, because they were not made by a craftsman, Velo Hayu Le Umanim, Velo Kahal Yisrael, Behem Maite Velo Nadova Klal, and Klal Yisrael and artisans had nothing to do with them. Avol Hain Sol, they are a secret, Mosul Le Moshe Mipi Agavura, given to Moshe Rabbeinu from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who kissed or warned the Kedusha? Either he himself wrote them to Kedusha, or the Hoyu Ma'aseh Shemayim, or they were given to Moshe Rabbeinu as an item miraculously rendered into script from heaven. And because they are so holy, Yashirein Sam, the Torah mentions them without further elaboration, and with the Hei Hayadiyah, and we find a similar situation where items which are introduced for the first time, and nevertheless because of their very sanctity are introduced with a definite article, when we are told when Adam and Chava were expelled from Gan Eden, it says, Vayashkein mikedem leGan Eden es hakerubim. Okay. Now, so what are we being told now? The Urim V'Tumim are a parchment on which is written the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Hinei Moshe Rokach Tzav HaUrim V'HaTumim, the Moshe Rabbeinu took that parchment with the Shema Masorah in whatever combination, והנה חום שם בכל של המצפל, and put it into the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, אחרי שהביט את אהרון הויסוד והחושן, as soon as אהרון had put on the breastplate. כמו שאומר, as it says, ויתן לו וזו איפה, ויחקור אותו מחית ואיפה, ויחקור לו וזו חושן, ויתן לו וחושן, as אורים ויצאתו מן. Meaning, Kiriachatein, after the breastplate was fitted on Aharon HaKohen, Nistanon ben Kiflei HaKohen, he put them into the Kiflei HaKohen, the pleats of the breastplate. Now let's find out what are they all about. The Ha'inyan Hu, says the Ramban, the matter is as follows. Ki Ha'yu Shemos Kedoshim. They were holy names. Mikochon, and through the sanctity that they had, Ya'iru Ha'osiyos Me'avnei HaKohen, they would illuminate the letters on the stones of the breastplate, El Eile HaKohen, before the eyes of the Kohen, HaShoheil the Mishpaton, who was inquiring from heaven in regard to a certain matter. So as long as the Urim the Tumim were there we say it, they were a divine battery. When a question would be raised, then the various letters that were appropriate to the answer would light up, and the Kohen Gadol, who is the only one who saw that, he would be able to give the reply directly from our Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Hamotel, I give you an example. Kitasher Shoalu, in Sosin Pelik Aleph, when the Jewish people ask, Mi Yalilonu El Hakanani B'tachil Olehi Lochem, who will be the one to lead us in war against the Canaanites? Hoya HaKohen Mechavein B'Shem Eshehemun in this, right? So the Kohen would immediately direct his attention to the Urim, the Heiru Li'enod, and they would light up in front of his eyes the letters of Yehuda. That's one of the names of the tribes on the breastplate. And then, so you'd lit up from Levi, the Yayin from Shimon, the Lamed from Levi, and the Hay from Avram. According to those people who say Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's names were in the Urim. If you don't agree that Avram's name was there, so where did they get the hay from? Oh, Shehiru Tamachinit Lenegidinov Ha'em Yehuda. The hay from Yehuda lit up against them. So what happened here? Through the sanctity of the Urim, letters are lighting up. But they're not in any order. Yehine Kashir Horosios Me'idos Elene Hakoi. And when the letters light up in front of the Kohen, a guy in Lo Yodea Siduron, he doesn't know what order the letters are to be in. Kimin Herosios are Shetidron Ehem, because the truth of the matter is the reply is, Yehuda Yaleh. Yehuda is the one to go up. But if you don't know how to put the letters into the proper order, then you've got the mathematics of permutations and combinations, you can have any number. Or you're asking the Herosios Ehem, the message should have been, Hoy Hei Daliyah. El Hei Al Yehuda. The tables are Chedos, Ramos, Leon, any combination. So first of all, the Urim tell you what letters are lit up. They are the ones that light up those letters. So you've got to put those letters into order. I will hold you some Shemus HaKodesh HaKodesh Nikro in Tumim. So therefore we needed other Shemus HaKodesh which are called Tumim. Yitzchon Yalei Bakurim Tumim B'Yadir Inyan Harosyon Shehiru Leinov. And through those Tumim, which are other Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now the letters will be arranged so that the Kohen Gadol knows the order that these letters are supposed to be. And he asks to the Tumim and the Urim, what's going on with this woman? And the letters lit up. Shin, Kaf, Reish, Hey. And he thought it's by Shikona. But he didn't realize that apart from getting the letters lit up, you got to get the letters in the right order. It said Kishera. Or, as some people say, Kisora, that you would have a child in a year's time. So therefore, Hannah went up to Eli and said to him, if you think I'm a Shikora, you're not the man for the job. Because if you would be a real Kohen Gadol and would know exactly how to use the universe in him, then you would know that I am not Shikora with. So that's exactly what goes on in regard to the Urim and Thummim, and as I said, the gone theme about Hanok. Although I once mentioned in the Nel of Rosh Hashanah something well worth mentioning again, it's a very emotive interpretation.
One Hasidic rabbi says, you know, Eli had terrible trouble from his children. The Gemara, the prophet says, after his brothers, his sons never went in his way, they never followed his example, they were an embarrassment to him. And the Tanakh actually spells out the various nefarious activities in which they were involved, even though they are generously interpreted, etc., but leave that as it may. So this Hasidic rabbi said, Eli comes upon this woman and she's crying bitterly for a child, and Eli says to himself, if she would know what I know about having children, she wouldn't be crying. She can't be sober. Anybody who cries so desperately for children, if she would know what I know, the children can be the biggest broch and the best of broch, she wouldn't be praying so hard. It's by Yachshaveh or Kishikol. A very emotive interpretation. Anyway, as I said, the gong is the more traditional. Now, so let us move on then to a number of other items we have the Urim V'Thummim. We leave the Shtava Gabbala, Oud Chazon, Lamoed. Let us move then on to one particular thought that I wanted to mention to you, which I think is worthwhile drawing to your attention. Mentioned in this week's Sidra are the Mizbach HaOlo, the author of this, the burnt offering is offered every day, morning and evening, Tomishel Shachar, Tomishel Beno Abayim, and in which the Ketores are offered. Mizbach HaKetores, that's at the beginning of Perek Lamed. Let us get a bit of an idea, Halacha L'maaseh, about our synagogue. Not going to quote anything that you have in front of you. I suddenly realized this afternoon that I hadn't mentioned this, but you're going to see what I want to mention. There is a statement made by a Rabbeinu Meir, one of the great Rishonim, Bar Yatufa. And he is quoted by the Mordechai, another one of the great Rishonim, at the beginning of the first Perek of Gemara Shabbat. And Rabbeinu Meir makes the following halachic announcement. That one is allowed to use the room of synagogue for any secular purpose whatsoever. There's the Chatan Sofer, and he's talking about one of the Rishonim. Nelmoni menu Mishnah Mefureshet. Rabbeinu Meir forgot a Mishnah. Them fighting words. Nelmoni menu Mishnah Mefureshet. To say about a Rishon that he forgot a Mishnah. What's the Mishnah that he forgot? It is a Mishnah Megillah dot com. Here's some of the Yehudah or Rabbi Yehudah. Says Rabbi Yehudah, they sat Nefer Shecholei. Even if a shul is destroyed, ein shelchin al gagal pelos. You're not even allowed to put fruit on the roof in order to dry. Because in those countries, as you know, the roof up. So the Chasam Sofer, how can Rabbeinu Meir say that you're allowed to use the roofs of synagogues for any secular purpose when the Mishnah says in Megillah, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, that you are not allowed to use the roof of a synagogue, even if the synagogue is now destroyed, but the roof is intact, you can't even use it as a dry roof. There's Rabbi Meir Shapiro, Lublin law. I would like to suggest that Rabbi Meir didn't forget the Mishnah at all. Fellow Kirk, as you know, the Beit HaMikdash was divided into three areas. There is the outer courtyard, the Adzorah. There is the inner sanctum, which is the Heichal, in which you have the menorah, the Shulchan, etc. And then you have the Kodesh HaKodesh in the Holy of Holies, in which was the Ark. There is a Tosfos in Sochim. And the Tosfos says that if in the Beit HaMikdash there is a roof on the Azorah, on the courtyard, you could use it for secular purposes. But if there was a roof on the Heichal, you could not. That's the truth. There's Rabbeinu, there's the Meshav here. Let me ask you a question. What is the sanctity of our synagogue? Well, we expect, and it's a Gemorian Brachos, that the tefillos were instituted to replace the sacrifices. Tefillah, Kenegas, Keminim, Tiknum. If the whole Kedusha of a Beit HaKnesset derived from the tefillos that are being offered there, and if the tefillos are to replace the korbanos, the olah, the tamid, where was the tamid brought? It was brought in the Azara. So therefore the roofs of our synagogue should have a din of the roofs of the Azara. And according to Tosfos and Sochim, one is allowed to use the roofs of the Azara for secular purposes. And consequently, Rabbeinu Meir is right. But what about Rabbi Yehuda, who's a Tanna? Rabbi Yehuda says in the Yerushalmi that Stilo is not in place of sacrifice. The Stilo is in place of Ketola. As the prophet says, Kikon Ketilosi Ketola Lifonach. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Beis HaKnesset has a Kedusha of the Heichal, which is where the altar on which the Ketolos was offered was placed. And that is why Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to use the roof of a Beit HaKnesset for a secular purpose, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the roof of a shul has a din of the roof of a heichal. We paskin, interestingly enough, as you know, that the tefillos are in place of the tamidim, and therefore the roofs of our synagogues may indeed be used for secular purposes, but says the Rambam in his Shuvah, not the part of the roof which is directly over the ark, because that has a din of Kedush HaKadosh, where the ark was, and that's Heichov, and Gagin Shel Heichov, you cannot use. Let me just now come to another item which is not mentioned, but I want to conclude with this because I think it is a most poetic idea. Let me draw your attention now to Perek Chotes, Prophet Lamed. They come as a surprise. The Sidra is absolutely overflowing with wonderful inyanim. Shivat yomim, 7 days, yilboshon hakohen tachtov nibono. Shall the son who officiates instead of his father the Kohen wear them? Okay. Asher Yavoyah Mohel Moed Shalit Fakodet, who comes into the Yoel Moed in order to minister in holiness. We are told in regard to the Kohen Gadol, Yilvashem HaKohen Tachtov Nibonov, that the son inherits his father's position as Kohen Gadol. That's his right. Kohen Gadol dies, his son is the automatic successor. There is a Gemara in Yoma. Let me read it out for you. Tanya, we learned in the Braitha, Yochol Yehei Benau Shel Moshuach Miruchono Mishameish Tachtov Kederech She Benau Shel Kohen Gadol Mishameish Tachtov. We know that when Jewish people go out to war, there is a man, a Kohen, who goes out in front of the army, and there are certain declarations that he has to make. He is the one who is married, built a new house, whatever. He is the Mashiach Melchama. Tells the Gemara, you might have thought that in the same way as if the Kohen Gadol dies, his son takes over. You might have thought the same law applies to a Mashiach Melchama who dies. That's what you might have thought. Talmud Lomar, therefore the verse comes to tell you, Shivat Yonim Yilvashemach Kohen Tachtov Nibonov. Who is the only son who is able to take his father's place as Kohen? Only that one, Asher Yovo El Ohel Moed L'Shoreis Bakodes. Only the son of a Kohen, whose official function is to minister in the Beit HaMikdash, namely in the sanctuary. Implying that it applies only to the Kohen Gadol. Nisher Ohel Avol El Ohel Moed. Yes, so there to exclude another Kohen, Sha'ina Ra'ul of Owen Owen Owen, who may not officiate as a Kohen God. There is a law that if the Mashiach Melchoma dies, his son does not automatically succeed him. Follow closely. The fire is why? Why should it not go over the Yerusha? If it goes over the Kohen Gadol, it should go over with Mashiach Melchama. There's the Torah Tanima. The answer I would venture to suggest is the following. The Mashiach Melchama does not merely go out and read out a few psukim from the Torah and the Lord say, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shema, and Amen. The Mashiach Melchama has a duty not only to indicate those people who are ineligible to go out, or who are allowed to leave the front and go home, the Mashiach Melchama has a duty also to exhort the people to battle. And you're talking about placing Jewish lives in danger. And who says that the son of the Mashiach Melchama is as equally capable as his father to give the people courage? Maybe he's standing there like this while he's reading it out. And they see it. And they become disheartened. And it places the Jewish army in danger. So the Yerusha, you can only give over those duties which do not place Jewish lives in danger. But if you're going to place Jewish lives in danger by merely going for the next of kin, as it were, for the next one down the line, that is a most dangerous route to follow, and therefore the rabbis put it on the hook anyway. Can't be done. That's the Torah Tamimah's interpretation. Let me share with you, I saw it many, many years ago. I looked at people and I couldn't find the statement. Rav Kook Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Now is not the time to talk. But some people are going to pay and have to pay a din v'cheshbon for turning a man on each kodesh of that caliber into a kibbutzik with a kippah seruga. Because we'll speak about him some other time. People tell me of the years when he lived here in London and went to Machziki Adat, how the goyim used to stand outside their doors on a Shabbos morning to watch him walk from his house to Machziki Adat. Philosophy. Listen to what Rav Kook says. Why Mashiach Melchama does not go over the Yerusha? You are a thinker, a Jewish thinker. Says Rav Kook, because the theme of Yerusha is continuity. That's what Yerusha is. And by definition, war in Jewish thought is a temporary phenomenon. Peace is the desideratum. And you cannot invoke the union of continuity in an union which is by its definition a matter of temporary quality. War is temporary. Yerusha is permanent. You cannot invoke the theme of permanence into the theme of war, which by its very nature is a temporary phenomenon. That is Douglas' method. It puts into an end. Look what it's done. It put the entire union into a, on a different plane. It's given us an insight into how we look on things. That war is not the desired situation. Tacitus said, war is the natural state of man. Chazal say no. Chazal say a person may go out wearing an ornament. Yes. On Shabbat you can carry an ornament. There's a mission in Shabbos, but I thought you were on people who are of the opinion you can go out carrying the sword because they bring their tassels to the sword is an ornament. And Chazal says, no, sir. If it says the Chitasuchar will come to eat him, by the Chanito say, Hemlema. If they will beat their plows in the, with their swords into plowshare and their spears into pruning hooks, and that is our prayer for the end of days, don't tell me that a sword is an ornament. A sword is evil. Not just the people who wield it, but the people of the actual instrument itself. It's not an ornament. Can't be carried on Shabbat. Because we believe, and we saw in the Chiyad of it, Haim Olam. We really have a completely new insight in Parshas Tisadar of who we are and what we are about. And we have to know that you don't have to be a member of Shalom Achshav in order to subscribe to the idea of heat. It's been in Chazal for longer than these people have ever been. And the idea, the only difference that I mentioned it here, that we have to notice, the standard that goes on. The machlokes is not between peace now and war now. The answer is between the differences between those people who say peace now and those people who say it is not peace at any price. Because peace at any price is not peace. And that's the big nafka miller. It's not between peace now and peace never. The people who oppose it, not because in their heart of hearts they disagree with the basic axiom that neither one peace and never one peace. People who say that don't know Jews and don't know the suffering that Jews have had. And that's why we have to remind ourselves through Parshas Tzavos that when we speak about Milchama, we cannot speak about Yerusha, because Yerusha speaks about going from generation to generation to generation, and our prayer is that war will be wiped out as soon as possible, if not before that. So we leave it over here, Mr. Shem Parshas Tzavos, Thursday a week.